decision tree that any employee can follow if they're thinking about whether or not they should quietly quit.
Welcome to Your Intended Message, the perfect place for leaders and promising professionals who want to convey the intended message for greater success. Every week, we interview experts who address the challenges and best practices to deliver your message effectively. That might be one-to-one, one-to-few, or one-to-many. And perhaps the most important conversation, one-to-self. I'm your host, George Torok.
My guest today is Chris Tuff. Here's three facts that I think you should know about Chris. One, he is the author of two books, The Millennial Whisperer and Save Your Asks. Ask, A-S-K-S. And two, he believes that quiet quitting is the wrong way to handle work frustration and that it doesn't have to cost your company money to create a reward system within your team. And three, besides kiteboarding and surfing, learning about people's dreams gives Chris the most energy. And as you can see, he clearly gets a lot of energy because he always puts a lot of energy back. Chris Tuff, welcome to Your Intended Message.
Yeah, I'm so excited to be here. Let's do this thing.
Wonderful to talk with you. And Chris, let's pick up on that item about quiet quitting is the wrong way to handle frustration. I can guess, but tell me from your perspective, why is that wrong and what's the alternative?
Sure. So, George, you and I have both been in relationships, whether it be those who were married to or prior relationships, where you go through, you know, you might get in a fight or you might be dissatisfied and you give each other the silent treatment, right? Or, you know, I know friends that have, I'll check in on them and they'll tell me about some sort of argument they had with someone and they're like, yeah, we're just not talking anymore. And then what happens every single time in any one of those situations is that they either make up and they say, I can't believe we just spent all that time not talking to each other. What a waste. Or the relationship fizzles and then nothing ever happens and people go their own way. And that is the equivalent of quiet quitting to me. And so many of these managers and executives that I talk to, everyone's overwhelmed, right? And so one of the things that I try to shift the mindset around is that I put it on the employees to actually take action on that dissatisfaction. Because to me, George, there is nothing worse in life than complacency. And so I actually even made a decision tree that any employee can follow if they're thinking about whether or not they should quietly quit. And so I am wholeheartedly against that whole movement. And, you know, I mean, it's not something that's new, right? We used to call them, you know, floaters in the last one, or, you know, we've always had this sort of complacency or apathy. And to me, there is, once again, nothing worse. That's actually what poisons the organizations.
Okay, Chris, I'm sure there are folks who are listening who are either close to that quiet quitting decision or they have people on their team. So you teased us. Tell us more about that decision tree.
Yeah, so I mean, it goes back to one of my rules, George, which I put in the Millennial Whisperer, which is what I'll tell anyone willing to listen, whether they're on my team or someone seeking my advice. And it's what I call your sitting in the car rule. And if 2 days go, if you have 2 days in a row that, you know, that moment and today in a hybrid workforce, maybe it's, you know, as you're drinking coffee about to dive onto your Zoom calls, but that moment where you're about to go into work and you have that kind of heavy source of dread, if you have 2 days in a row of that source of dread and it's not associated to you pushing yourself out of your own comfort zone, because that's what you need to do, then you've got to take action on that. And so I think everyone that is going through 2 days in a row of that sit in your car rule, you got to, if you're feeling that source of dread, something needs to change. And, you know, one of the biggest pieces is it's up to you as the employee to raise your hand and say, hey, manager, I'm feeling unfulfilled in this or whatever it is. And here's some of the things that I think would actually make me a little bit more engaged, right? And so we can't just put it on the leaders to do that from a top-down perspective. Although, you know, it's up to the leaders to make, you know, for example, those lateral moves within an organization. We got to make it easier for people to take action on deep down what I'm trying to inspire, which is allowing people to thrive in their jobs that are closer to their purpose and passions. And so the decision tree essentially takes you through, are you, my ratio of kind of what fires you up and then what I call like your zone of suck is your 70-30 rule. So 70%, generally speaking, of your job should actually fire you up. And I actually put this into tactics where on the first week that someone joins my team, I will have them take their job description and figure out what's in your 70% zone of excellence and fire you up. And then what's in your 30% zone of suck, right? Because the harsh reality, and I tell this to anyone willing to listen, is that 30% of all of our jobs are going to suck. For me, it's anything in Excel or having to do with budgeting or calendars, right? Like all of those logistics pieces are in my zone of suck. And when I go through 2 days in a row of budget season, I know I just got to power through to the other side. Because one of these huge impacts that's happening, especially in the millennial and Gen Z workforce, is because of social media, there's this idea that the grass is always greener on the other side. And so we've got to, as leaders, educate our employees as to how that is not the reality in life. And it's up to us to also coach them and mentor them through to where 70% of their jobs fire them up and 30%, it's always going to suck.
And Chris, I see great wisdom in that ratio because too many of us might have heard the phrase, do what you love and success will follow. And people think, well, I just want to do what I love all the time. Yeah. And yes, you should do what you love, but that's not enough because you're always going to have to do something that you don't love to keep doing what you love.
100%. And it's interesting, George, as I go into some very large, in one case, a Fortune 50 worldwide, one of the most famous brands in the world. And the first question after my keynote, I'll usually have a millennial and Gen Z panel. And the first question I'll ask is, all right, is the 70-30 rule in place at your organization with a whole wall of executives listening on? And it's how I break the ice. And it was interesting in this one instance, people had flown in from all over the world. And this young gentleman goes, well, yeah, it's 70-30. The other way, right? Actually, because of the bureau, I came here to do my trade, right? To do, and I'm 26 years old. I've been here for almost 3 years. And to get anything done, it's nearly impossible. And by the way, I'm working on this thing and I want to be working on this thing. And so, yeah, I'd actually, and then the other five people on the panel, they kind of looked around and they was like, yeah, I'd say it's about right. And they're kind of like, you know, apprehensive, like, what are the executives going to say? I said, awesome, that's perfect. And then I turn to the executives and say, now it's up to you all to help offset that. Because you've got, if you want to keep these employees, we've got to be more in line of that 70-30. So let's talk about some of the creative ways we can do that, right? Let's allow your people over after hours to work on other categories. Get some more of that cross-pollination that are in line, that's in line with their passions and start scratching that itch. But let's get creative about figuring out solutions to offset that. And because here's one of my biggest takeaways, George, is that the younger you, so boomers and Xers, generally speaking, were brought up, you go to work and then your passions, you can go play golf on the weekend, right? Do your hobbies on the side, but you go to work, get it done. And the younger you get, the more of an expectation that passions will be itched in those four walls. And so as you get into the younger millennial set, into Gen Zers, so pretty much 35 and under, what happens is when those passions aren't being itched, they are leaving, right? And we're starting to see that reflected in the numbers. But at the same time, it's up to us to educate them along the way to show them that the grass is not always greener on the other side. So if you have that 70-30 rule in place and you're actually doing some of these creative things, the best thing we can do when some of those younger employees quit is let them leave with grace. And a lot of times they'll end up coming back. We call them boomerangs. And we're actually seeing that in the data of the people at the height of the pandemic that quit their jobs. We're now starting to see 4% of those people coming back to those jobs that they left. So not digress.
And so what I'm noticing there is that both leaders and employees need to recognize that ratio, and leaders are probably the ones who need to raise it, saying, yes, I recognize that you don't love all of your job, but there's some of it that you do love, right? Right?
Exactly. Exactly.
And tell me what those are. And do we have this, you know, in roughly 70-30, some days it feels is all bad, but that's not every day.
Right. Right. And it takes time for young people. It takes time for them to find the things that they actually enjoy. Right. And you don't really learn until you're in it. And I mean, it took me 5 lateral job moves that I made over a 6-year period, making $28,000 a year. I remember my British father took me and said, Christopher, what are you doing? Like, you got to stick. I'm like, Dad, I'm kind of figuring it out. Right. And then it was actually in that kind of 6th move over a 6-year period that I finally fell into something that I was really passionate about. Because what's happening is we're essentially optimizing to that place with time. And it was interesting, George, I went into an organization that had, okay, so they have 100,000 employees, but 2,500 HR leaders, all right, which will give you perspective to just how much they put in their people and culture, 2,500 people. And so I dissected their data. We spent 2 months prepping for this meeting, and it all came down to just one big takeaway, which is just make it, everyone loves it here, but you make it so hard for people to actually move laterally to other parts of that organization. The simplest thing you can do is allow people to make those lateral job moves. Because people are now leaving because you make it so difficult because you end up prioritizing those jobs for people from the outside.
Lateral moves. Is that something that you notice there's a great demand for with younger people or with all people?
I think all people, really. But younger people are, I mean, as you look at the once again, that generational difference, especially, I mean, and I would dissect older millennials and younger millennials into, you know, 40 to 35 is a very different segment than 35 to 24 and into the Gen Z side. And one of the key reasons for that is the impact of social media. What social media has done is it's created this expectations that passions and dreams can actually be pursued. Which is great, but it's also a problem, right? And so that expectation to actually be at a job that you enjoy, that's actually scratching those things that you yearn to be kind of honed and developed. When those aren't being met, they're like, screw it. I'm just going to go I'll figure out something on my own. And you know, the other big kind of trend that's evolved that the pandemic catalyzed is the gig worker is no longer just the Uber driver or the pizza guy, right? That's actually these white collar jobs are going into a gig economy because as the COVID hit, you know, let's just take like a creative copywriter or designer, right? There wasn't that much of an ecosystem out there for those people to just charge money unless they're a part of an agency or a larger organization. And now there's all of these opportunities for these younger workers to actually work on their own terms. And the number one thing that organizations need to wrap their head around is work flexibility. That's number one. right? And it's the easiest one. And it's expanding our definition of not just working from where you want to work, although that's important. It's expanding our definition of work flexibility to be more of a choose your own adventure for our employees. And George, the example I use is there's actually this company in California, and they have a 99% retention rate. And they have one tactic that falls right in line with this work flexibility, which is that on your 1 year anniversary, you show up, you celebrate your 1 year anniversary, and you have the opportunity to create your own job description with the caveat that if you sell it into everyone else on your team, you can actually start doing that job. And so in my keynote, I talk about this, and I'll ask the audience, okay, it's in California. I've given you a little bit of data. Guess the company. So George, I'll have you just guess the company that does this out in California.
Disney.
Okay, perfect, right? Yeah, I hear Disney, I hear Uber, Facebook, Twitter, whatever it is, right? It's actually Morningstar Tomato Farms, and they make tomato paste. And this is the work flexibility they have for their hourly workers that they have to be there for a certain amount of hours. They're making and packing tomato paste. They've expanded this to their very blue-collar workforce, and it's had a massive impact on not only the culture, but also that retention piece. And so one of the things I emphasize, George, is we've got to expand that definition of what work flexibility looks like for our organization.
I'm blown away by that example. Yeah. that's impressive. Now, Chris, you said earlier on that it's up to the employee to speak up, to not go silent. So how do they start the conversation? Where do they go?
So let's back up, George. So one of the biggest misconceptions about millennials and Gen Zers is that they don't want feedback. I hear from a lot of these leaders like, hey, Chris, anytime I bring Sally into my office or Billy, they end up crying. And I say, yeah, he's like, so I don't give them feedback anymore. I was like, listen, you got to stop that. First of all, let's recognize that feedback is something that both these generations, 40 and under, they crave it. But the problem with your feedback is you only give negative feedback. So feedback is also positive feedback. So give them a high five when they need it, right? Which actually goes into more of that category of the need for rewards and recognition. Because here's one of the other harsh things that's real is that we have two generations that are very sensitive. They've been snowplow parented by their parents. They tried to get all the obstacles out of their way. They had participation trophies at every term. And we got to meet them in the middle on some of these things. And so one of those key places is actually with giving feedback. And one of the things that I will tell these leaders is that try to give your feedback within a 24-hour period of it happening and then ground it in data. And if you do that, while also adding a little bit of velvet to that hammer when you're giving it, so I call, go in with some sort of compliment, and then you go in with the data, and then you end it with, and keep working on that thing. You got this. You've come so far, right? So that's one of the big pieces in terms of that we've got to be giving more feedback along the way, because they're actually craving it.
Now, it's been a while, been decades since I worked in the corporate environment, and I sure hope that they're well past the annual review, annual review where you get your feedback for the year. We know it needs to be happening weekly, if not daily.
Yes, and it's not happening. I can guarantee you that.
And it's not happening because the leaders are unwilling or unable to provide it?
I think it's one is access, right? A lot of these managers are overwhelmed, right? Mm-hmm. And the pandemic only catalyzed those things. So I think a lot of these managers don't have enough time, right? But they also, no one's telling them how important it is, right? And one of those big shifts that I also will tell audiences is that the expectation of both millennials and Gen Zers is that, sure, you'll be a boss, which is how Xers and boomers were raised. It's much like our relationship we had with our parents, George. And it was very authoritarian. When you sat down at the dinner table, it was, Christopher, where are you thinking about going to college? How are your grades? You know, it was very authoritarian. Whereas you juxtapose that to millennials and Gen Zers, they're playing beer pong out back with their parents, talking about who they hooked up with while sharing beers, right? It's much more of a peer-to-peer almost relationship. And what happens is these young people get into our organizations and they're craving that same thing from their bosses. And I'm not saying that we have to be friends with all of our employees, but what I'm saying is that we've got to double down on that authentic connection and getting to know them as humans, as well as who they are in their jobs and start pushing that authentic connection piece around becoming more of that mentor and coach, much in what they had in their parents along the way.
Authentic connection. How do you know if it feels right?
So authenticity is one of the things that's so few and far between in this world. And my whole platform is around authentic connection. And you know, one of the things that I emphasizes what I call the art of the flyby. And the art of the flyby is simply going by anyone on your team's desk and just saying, or, you know, in a hybrid workforce, texting them a video text message and say, George, that vacation you took last weekend looked epic. Tell me more about it. Like, I saw that you hung out at the beach and tried out surfing. That's awesome. Props to you. How did it go? Right? It's just taking a little bit of that vested interest in their daily lives to then create that foundation of that authentic connection. Because it's off of that that you can start having real conversations, right? That whether it be giving the feedback or steering them into a new direction within your organization or even outside the organization. People will ask me, so they're like, Chris, you're such a like nice guy. And how do you fire people? And I tell them a story. People will laugh at me because a lot of times when I fire someone, not every time, obviously, but a lot of times it's them hugging and us laughing and smiling as they go into a new direction. And it usually starts off like this. Bobby, did you know my sitting in your car rule? Have you been dreading coming to work the last couple of days or last few months? Because here's what I'm sensing. You're not fired up about this anymore. And that's fine, right? One of the things that I've seen in you that lights you up is X, 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 and X. Are you feeling that? And then Bobby's like, yeah, dude, I hate this. I don't like advertising. I don't like what I'm doing, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, okay, so here's what we're going to do. We need to call it quits because, you know, I only allow a team only, right? Like this is a spot on the team that someone else will thrive in. But here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to help you take action towards those things that fire you up. So I'm going to put you in touch with blank and blank and blank and blank to actually set you up a new place. And let's just call it here that you'll be done in 2 weeks. Cool. And they're like, thank you, Chris. Right. So that's some of those things that I'm not only emphasizing, but also practicing.
And as you're saying that, I'm seeing an analogy in my mind here where you've got your team sitting around the room and they're sitting in different chairs, and some chairs they're more comfortable with than others. And so if they're sitting in the wrong chair, you're going to say, well, that you don't look comfortable there. Do you want to try another chair? And maybe, oh, we don't have another one in this room. Maybe the chair you're looking for is in another room. Great I'll analogy. Help you find it.
Exactly, George. Exactly.
Mm. And Chris, so you talked about the company that with the 70 was flipped. And is that close to the norm that you've been seeing?
I'd say the norm I hear is about 50-50. It is generally what I'm finding. You know, part of this kind of imperative on leaders is to also have them admit the fact that social media is ruining a lot of us from a perspective, you know, within our kind of frame of reference. And, you know, one of the things I talk about in my keynote is I share one of my most embarrassing stories on any employee's first week on the job. And I'll sit them down as I segue into this 70-30 rule. And I say, listen, it was 6 years ago that I was out in Sun Valley, Idaho for a wedding with my family. And I hired a fishing guide. And it was the most epic day. I turned to the fishing guide and he had all the rods ready. We were about to jump into the river. And I go, listen, before we get going, I want to be honest with you. And that is that I hate fishing. I don't really care about fishing. And all I want are two Instagram shots. I want one of the fish with the net in the background. And then I said, have you ever seen a river run through it? And this fishing guy just looks back at me disgusted. He goes, yes. I go, all right, I want a video of me Brad Pitting it in the river with the river going by, the mountains in the background, and then the sun like right over there. Cool. And he goes, you're going to spend $600 for an Instagram post? I said, no, that's two posts. That's 300 each. Let's go. And you know, it was super, like, now that I actually admit that fact, right? It's embarrassing. And I tell my team, I too also do it. And the harsh reality is that we've got to stop comparing our insides to other people's outsides of what they're presenting out there. Two, we got to understand that even in our jobs, we get this expectation that the perfect job exists for us right out of school. And that is not the reality. And it is my job to help you move towards that, but it's not going to happen overnight. And 30% of your job is going to suck. And then that's when we get into the 70-30 rule.
And that's probably something that should be discussed right in the hiring interview itself.
Exactly. And so many, one thing I hear a lot from what I'm hearing from a lot of the organizations out there right now is just how tough hiring is. And they're like, I don't even know how to keep the bar high. And I said, listen, first of all, it's a courtship one, right? As you're interviewing for that. And it's just like dating, right? But just with any courtship, get outside of the office, get outside of that office, go to lunch, right? Go to a couple of coffees together, feel it out. And during that process, also make sure you're getting to know them, not just as a job candidate, but as a person. And I'll tell anyone that the most important question we can ask anyone, whether it be someone we're trying to recruit to our firm or someone that we're trying to create a relationship to, that we're trying to sell our services to, the most important question we can ask anyone is, what is your dream? What fires you up, right? And when we get there, you know, and in this courtship for trying to hire that person, it's when they actually tell you what that dream is, that's where the bonds lie. But not only that, you then iterating back to saying, I love that. Now, here's the job that you're interviewing for. And this is why it makes sense towards that journey to that thing on this, over that, whatever that dream is. And once again, the same is true. That's authentic connection, George, is once we start going there, that builds the foundation off of which I say anything's possible.
Chris, for people who'd like to learn more about you and your services, where can they best reach you?
Yeah, the best place is on my new website, Chris Tuff, C-H-R-I-S. T-U, T for Tom, U, F for Frank, .me, ChrisTuff.me. And I'm very active on Instagram / Christopher Tuff. Actually, that's LinkedIn. Instagram is Tuff22, T-U-F-F-22. So Instagram, if you guys just look me up, or on LinkedIn, if you have specific questions or I can be a resource in any form, just let me know. But yeah, those are the best places.
And you can find those links in the description below. And so, Chris, I'm going to ask the obvious question. How tough is Chris?
So I'd actually say my wife is much tougher than I am. She was actually a professional soccer player and is every bit as strong now as she was then. I would say what's interesting in our relationship, I'm actually more of like the feminine archetype. Like I'm the one that wears my heart on my sleeve. And so from a sensitivity standpoint, I'm not very tough. Right. But from being able to get smashed up kiteboarding and bounce back and, you know, whatever those things are, I'm pretty tough.
Chris, if you could sit down with a team leader and provide them with one, two, or three pieces of advice to get more authentic with their team, to get better in touch. What might that be, that one, two, or three pieces of advice you'd give them?
So, well, first of all, number one is understanding what that team is craving from a leader. And number one is inspirational leadership. Two is autonomy. And three is transparency. Okay. So we got to understand what those things look like for us, right? The second piece that I would tell them is that we've got to start creating more authentic connection by taking down that line between our personal and professional lives. Ask those questions. How are you doing? Not just at work, but as a person, and taking a vested interest in them is imperative. And then the third thing that tactically speaking is going to have the greatest return on your time and money is we've got to create a rewards and recognition program from a top down. And then also from a peer-to-peer perspective. And what that looks like top down, it's at Nike, we created a golden Jordan shoe that we would give away on a monthly basis to an employee and recognize them through the different systems that Nike kind of prioritizes, right? And then the peer-to-peer, how I actually start my all hands meetings is I say, all right, everyone, thanks for coming in. It's Monday, all hands, let's go. First of all, I want to thank George for crushing it on your intended message and actually going way above and beyond for preparing for that podcast. Did awesome. Everyone check it out. Snaps to George, and I give snaps. And here's what's so interesting is that what a lot of people do in those all hands meetings is they will have everyone shows up with their agenda and all the things. But when you start the meeting with just giving props, everyone else actually then starts giving props to one another. And so you cover a lot of the things that you would in a very dull manner in a way that actually recognizes one another. And so, yeah, the third piece would be the rewards and recognition.
Valuable advice. My guest today is Chris Tough, reminding you to stop comparing your inside to other people's outside.
If you like what you heard, remember to like, comment, and share this podcast. Come back every week for more practical insights to help you deliver your intended message. I'm your host, George Torok.